Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Ms. Markle, would you please lead us in the pledge? Okay, I have two public comment cards, but they're both marked specific agenda items, so you would rather wait on both of those and speak to the specific agenda item. Is that correct? Okay. Okay, we'll move on then to Jonathan Edwards from Government Financial Strategies.
Okay, good afternoon or good evening, I'm not quite sure which, but I'm Jonathan Edwards from Government Financial Strategies. I'm here to provide some more information about the potential bond issuance. First, I'll just review the goals and parameters for the bond sale. We've discussed this a little bit in the past. We'll review again how bonds and property taxes interact, go through some bond issuance scenarios, I'll go over some other information, and talk about a potential bond issuance schedule. So the goals of the bond sale that we've discussed are to have as much of the issuance expenses covered by the underwriter as possible, the underwriter being the lender, understanding that it costs money to issue bonds, costs money to borrow money. But it can be possible to have the underwriter or lender cover those costs, which preserves more money for our facilities projects. Another goal is to have as much of the bonds as possible be callable or prepayable after 10 years. So we'd have no prepayment for the first 10 years, but then we want to have as many of the principal amount of the bonds be prepayable, refinanceable after that first 10-year period. The legal parameters that we're working under are a maximum bond term of 40 years, and a maximum projected tax levy, projected at the time we issue the bonds, of $60 per $100,000 of assessed value. Just to remind us, so bonds, of course, lead to tax rates. Essentially, the tax rate for each year is established by taking the required tax collection, which is composed primarily of the upcoming year's bond payment. There's also a little bit of a reserve for potential delinquencies built into that. So they take the required tax collection, and that figure essentially, or in a simplistic way, is divided by the total assessed value of all taxable parcels within the school district. And then the result is a tax rate. And essentially, that's how the tax rate is calculated. Each property pays its pro rata share based on its individual assessed value. So as we've discussed, a property with an assessed value of $200,000 would pay twice as much as a property with a value of $100,000. We've talked about that, and that's, of course, how general property taxes work as well. The reasons assessed value can change. How can assessed value, for example, increase over time? Properties are sold and then reassessed at the sale price. So, for example, if a property has been owned by somebody for 20 or 30 years, and, of course, under Proposition 13, the assessed valuation of that property has been capped at the Proposition 13 growth rate. Regardless of any market increases, the assessed value of that property could be significantly less than its market value. It would certainly be very common to see if a property that had been held that long that its assessed value would almost certainly be possibly significantly less than its market value. If that house is sold, then, of course, the sale price represents the market value. Immediately, the assessed value of that particular address comes up to the current market value. So it's possible for the assessed value of a given parcel to double overnight under that method. Another thing, of course, are properties improved and reassessed with the value of the improvement. So, of course, if we had an empty parcel that had a certain assessed value and a house was subsequently constructed on that parcel, then the value of that home being added to the parcel, the entire parcel would be reassessed possibly quite significantly with the construction of that home. If neither of those two things happens with regard to a given parcel, then under Proposition 13, the assessed value of the property can increase by the lesser of 2% or the change in the California Consumer Price Index. So since 1976-77, essentially when Proposition 13 kicked in for this purpose, the increase has been less than 2% on only six occasions. So it's almost always the case that we have a standard 2% increase on assessed value, again, if nothing happens to that parcel. And then, of course, as something we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years, is it is possible for them, if the market value of a property declines below its assessed value, then the assessed value can be adjusted downwards. So certainly, for example, homes or properties may be purchased in 2006 or 2007. Possibly they have market values now that are less than the sale price, in which case the assessed value would have also been marked down accordingly. And that's the sort of thing that can drive a decrease in assessed value. However, if the market eventually turns around and subsequently increases, then the assessed value of that property can be caught up to what it would have been without that decrease in the assessed value. So does that kind of make sense in terms of how assessed values work and how assessed values can change? And in fact, assessed values can increase even if no new homes are built, for the reasons I kind of discussed in terms of the 2% adjustment or turnover in housing, things like that. Of course, housing construction, new construction, can also be a significant driver of assessed value as well. Looking at our historical assessed value, you can see that despite the significant the decrease since 2007-08, the average since 1997 for the school district has been 4.79% over that period of time. And of course, at the time the board called for the election, the average had been a little over 9% at that time, which is why going into the election, the assumed growth rate was 4.5%, which was thought to be certainly a reasonable number based on the information available at that time. The assumed future assessed values. So for the purposes of projecting or assuming what future assessed values or future tax rates could look like, we need to know or make an assumption about future assessed values. The light dashed line on the top, that's the assumed growth in assessed value that we had that we were working with prior to the election. Okay? Obviously, assessed value in the last few years has declined, so we're starting at a lower base now. So the dark dashed line on the bottom represents the currently assumed change in assessed value for the purposes of the bond scenarios, currently assuming a negative loss of 0.5%, 0.5% for fiscal year 13-14, followed by increasing growth there of 1% in the following year, then a 3% increase thereafter and 4.5% annually thereafter. So let's talk about tax collections. So under the Education Code, the county is legally responsible for levying a tax sufficient to pay bond debt service. The district is not legally liable for any shortfall in tax collection. So in other words, it is not a debt of the general fund. Any shortfall in tax collections can be made up in the following year. So if there was a shortfall, for example, that could be added to the following year's tax roll. So any shortfall is not an insurmountable or in perpetuity shortfall. It can be added to the following year's tax roll, and the tax is collected at that time. The county's tax levies for the district's bonds include a tax delinquency coverage factor, which can be adjusted based on tax delinquency trends. Currently, for bond planning purposes, that's assumed to be 9% for 2013-14 onwards. We've built that into the plan. Now, because the repayments on a potential new bond are significantly delayed, which, of course, that's required because of the tax levy constraint, I do want to make sure it's clear that over 95% of the annual tax collection for the next 20 years is for our existing bonds. So let me say that in another way. One of the reasons we're having a detailed conversation about this particular bond is that due to tax levy and assessed value challenges, we, in order to issue bonds, the district would need to delay repayment of the principal by many years. So we've talked about that. That's the reason we're talking about the interest costs on this bond, because we're delaying the repayment of principal longer than we have on past bond issuances. The flip side of that is that we're hardly making any payments on a new bond, should you wish to issue a new bond, over the next 15, 20 plus years, which means that there's hardly any tax collection that relates to any, should you wish to proceed with a bond, there's hardly any tax collection for a new bond issuance over that 20-year period. I guess another way of saying that is that the taxes that taxpayers have to pay for the next 20 years are pretty much already there. Does that make sense? I'll show you a chart in a moment that might help with that, but that's important to understand.
Jonathan, yes. If the taxes aren't being collected for the next 20 years, what's happening to interest at that in the over that 20-year period?
Well, the way a capital appreciation bond works is it's like a U.S. savings bond. You buy it, you know, as you know, U.S. savings bond, you buy it for $50. 10 years later, you cash it in for $100, right? Okay, we've probably all seen that. That is a capital appreciation bond. A U.S. savings bond does not pay interest. You get a certain amount. The interest accrues within the investment, and the interest is paid out at the end. So in a way, I guess another way of saying it, which certainly connotes certain things, but a balloon. In other words, just like a U.S. savings bond, $50 up front, $100 when it matures. That's a ballooning payment. The interest builds up within it and is all paid out at the end. Does that make sense? So that's how you get that. Most of the bonds within the structure we're talking about, in fact, all of them, are. That's what a capital appreciation bond is. It doesn't pay interest every year. It builds up. Okay? I'm saying that the vast majority of bond payments for the next 20 years are for bonds you already have outstanding. The taxpayers of the district, the bonds are repaid from property taxes. Okay, so let's look at bond issuance scenarios. The first scenario, scenario one, is maximizing our bond proceeds. Okay? So under this scenario, this chart shows the required tax collection for all Measure P bonds through the year 2049. The dark blue area are the bonds that the school district issued in 2009. Those are the payments that you already have in place for the bonds that we issued in 2009. Okay? The lighter shaded area is the projected bond payments / tax collection for new bonds, should the board wish to proceed, should you want to issue all of the remaining $12.56 million. You can see, and in fact, on a chart like this, it's actually hard to see, there's hardly any payments on the new bond for the next 20 plus years. It really kicks in the year 2035, 36, when the old bond is paid off. Okay? That's why there's hardly any tax collection that's attributable. There's hardly any tax levy that relates to this new bond. There is a little bit. We're able to pay back a little bit sooner. And of course, we want to pay back as much as possible, as soon as possible. That's the more financially efficient thing to do. So is that kind of clear about how the payment structure would work? 95% of the payments on any new bond will not start to be made until the year 2035, 36, because we already have payments on our existing bond, and we don't have the tax levy constraint to do any more bond payments. Okay? Okay, so let's look at the projected levies. We've looked at the required tax collection. We talked about the fact that required tax collection divided by assessed value equals the projected levies. The dark blue lines, vertical lines, represent the current projected tax levies for our 2009 bond. I say projected because although we know what the payments are for our bond in 2009, has a fixed interest rate, we know exactly what our payments are. I don't know for certain what the assessed value will be 3 years from now. So that's why it's still a projection. But you can see the dark blue line that runs through the year 2035. Those are taxes you already have. Those are the taxes for the bond we've already sold in 2009. The light blue at the end is the projected tax levy on a new bond, should the board wish to proceed, if we were issuing the entire 12.56 million. You can see that there's virtually no tax levy added or in play for the next, or through the year 2035. That's just a byproduct of needing to delay the repayment of the new bond. We're going to review in a moment. I have a summary for you showing the interest costs fully. I've got all the information on that, absolutely. So this is not a win or anything. It's just a fact. And that's my job, is to point out the facts to you and make sure that I do as good a job as I can explaining those. So issuing this bond certainly has issues that we need to discuss and that we'll review, and I'll try and give you all the information as possible. But it cannot be said that it materially increases tax rates for the next 20 years. It certainly extends them. It extends the length of them. Absolutely. Okay? Now, this is a chart showing the projected tax levies for the three bonds that we actually have outstanding, because we have a 2006 bond from Measure H, we have a 2008 bond from Measure H, and then we have the 2009 bond from Measure P that I've most recently been referring to. Okay? So right now, for example, the projected tax levy for 2013-14 is approximately, total combined, is about $120 per 100,000. Okay? Again, and that's shown, that's the dark green. If you look to the left of that chart, the dark green, the light green, and the blue on top. Those are taxes that we've already issued. There's nothing that is being impacted on those by any decision you make today. You can see at the very top there, there is a very light, if you look on top of the dark blue lines on the left-hand side of your page, there's a very small amount, a light blue area. That would be the relatively small amount of tax for a new bond. Okay? Again, consistent with the past two charts I've shown you. The taxes on a new bond wouldn't really kick in until 2035. Basically, when the other three bonds have been all paid off by then. Okay? So essentially, this is extending a rate of taxation longer than if we didn't issue any bonds, of course the taxes would end in the year 2035. So this is extending the rate of taxation. It is not materially increasing tax rates over that 20-year period. That's not a subjective call, that's just a fact. Okay, in terms of, to address the board's questions about the financial aspects of this, so under this scenario one, it's the full issuance scenario, the projected bond term is just slightly less than 37 years, projected maximum tax levy of $59. The bond issuance amount would be about 12.56. With that, we could match 100% of the state funding for the three projects, Linda, Ella, and Arboga, so we'd get 10.3. So really, by issuing this bond, you'd get $22.88 million. Okay? Now, the total interest over the term of the bond is a little over $71 million. Okay? In today's dollars, because of course we're paying back that interest over time, most people have heard of inflation and know that a dollar in 10 years is not worth the same as a dollar today. We're getting our dollars today, paying it back in 10 years. It's worth less. So in today's dollars, to equalize that, it's $28.95 million. Now I've shown the ratios below that. So again, over the life of the bonds, the total interest as a ratio compared to the principal, it's 5.66. So the total interest is 5.66 times the principal of the bond. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, we've also talked about the fact that we're not just, you wouldn't just get the principal. You'd also get the state funding. Okay. So another way to look at it is that the interest as a ratio of what you'd get that you otherwise wouldn't is 3.11. And then when we look at the ratios of the interest in today's dollars, you're getting the money in today's dollars, the principal divided by the today's dollars interest, 2.3. And then again, when you take into account the state funding, 1.27. So there's no one way to look at this that's hands down the only way to look at it. That's why I'm presenting it to you in the different ways to think about this. Okay, so let's look at scenario two. Scenario two, a scenario the board asked us to specifically take a look at, which is, what if we just issued a bond where the constraint was essentially don't go more than 30 years? Okay, the last one was 37. What if we constrained that we wouldn't have a bond term, a loan term that was more than 30 years? That's scenario two. So you can see it's going to be the same sequence of charts I'm going to show you. The only difference in the charts is that the light, kind of lavender-coloured area for the 2012 bond is going to end 7 years sooner, rather than a 37-year loan, 30-year loan. Okay, does that make sense? So the blue area is, again, that's the 2009 bond. That's exactly the same. That's already there. The light area is the 2012 bond. You can see there's just a little bit of repayment on that bond before the year 2036, but really hardly anything. The repayment doesn't really kick in, which means the taxes don't really kick in for that bond until after the 2009 bonds are repaid. Projected tax levies, again, it should look very similar to the other scenario. It just ends sooner. The dark blue vertical lines, that's our existing 2009 projected tax levy. So essentially, if you do nothing, the projected tax levy on the 2009 bonds is roughly $57, $58 per $100,000 for the next 20 years or so, okay, until that's repaid. If we issue the bond, it'll go from $58 roughly to $60 over that 20-25 year period. And then once the 2009 bond is repaid, it will stay at $60. So again, issuing this bond extends, essentially it extends the current rate of taxation. It makes it longer in time, but you're not significantly increasing the tax rate today. Looking at the projected tax levies, again, this is the projected tax levies for our three bonds. Same thing, we've got Measure H, the 2006 and 2008 bonds from Measure H. We have the 2009 bond from Measure P. This is virtually exactly the same as the prior chart, again, just a little bit sooner. But again, you can see, the point is, the current rate of taxation taxpayers are paying is roughly $120 per $100,000 for all of the existing bonds. That's done, that's in place. Issuing the new bond, although we would love to be able to make payments sooner and have the bond have less interest, but that would increase taxes. This is not really increasing the rate of taxation very much in the next 20 years. You can see it's tiny, but it extends the rate of taxation, and therefore, of course, there's more taxpayer taxes to repay this, absolutely. Does that kind of make sense that, I guess if I made it clear that issuing this bond, there are a number of factors to be considered, but it does not, for the next 20 years, really increase the current rate of taxation, because there's virtually no tax for this proposed new bond during that period of time. That's actually just the byproduct of the challenge of having to delay the payments.
So actually speaking, after 7-year period. With all these combined, that's a fairly heavy tax situation for people. But then it goes down.
Yes, as the debt is, as the old bond
at the end bond. At the end period, it is down considerably. It's down by almost half.
Correct. So as soon as a bond is a loan, when the loans are paid off, the taxes stop.
So it is it's decreasing, but then the interest, I mean, that it's to the taxpayer, it's decreasing. It's not coming out, that much money is not coming out at the end.
It's to the taxpayer, it's, I guess, just as a matter of fact, once each bond / loan is paid off, it's done.
It's done.
So you can see in roughly the year 2032, 33, it suddenly goes down from about $120 to about $60.
Yeah.
Okay. That's because Measure H is done. Right then, Measure H is totally done. And then we're only left with Measure P and our 2009 bonds. That's the dark blue line that we see here for 2033, 34, and 35. That's just the 2009 bonds. Now, if we didn't issue any more bonds, it would end in 2035. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
It would end when that blue ends. You can see that issuing these new bonds again, it hardly adds anything on top of the 2009s. It's a small little sliver there. It extends the current rate of taxation on Measure P. Measure P is currently almost $60. Measure P will continue to be roughly $60 per $100,000. Just for longer.
Yeah, I get
that. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, so let's a summary of this scenario. Again, it's a 30-year scenario. The projected bond proceeds are about 6.9. Again, these projected proceeds, particularly in this structure, is going to be very dependent on market interest rates. Interest rates have gone up a little bit in the last few days. So that could fluctuate anywhere from 6 to $7 million. It really depends. We could qualify for some state matching funds with an issuance in that ballpark. So, you know, about $12.9 million in total. The interest on that is about 27.5, okay? In today's dollars, 12.68. Looking at our ratios, our interest to principal ratio is 3.94. And just to compare that, 3.94 versus 5.66. The reason the ratio is less is we're borrowing for a shorter period of time. If we borrow for a shorter period of time under the structure we have to do here, by definition, there's less interest accrual. And this is the lower amount of interest to the amount of principal. The flip side is there's less proceeds, less projects. So I won't go through all these numbers, we've kind of explained them, but that kind of gives you a flavor of what this scenario would cost taxpayers in interest. This is really an economic decision relative to taxpayers. And, you know, we've issued 25, 27-year bonds in the past, this district. 30-year bonds are common. The question is, what is the appropriate length of time? Is 37 years too long? 30 years is common. You know, is that 7-year period? Exactly why is the significance of that 7-year difference? That certainly could be significant. That's up to the board to decide, obviously. One thing I would like to briefly review is at our last board discussion, there was a little bit of a presentation or information provided, a video, that made reference to a school district in the San Diego area called Poway Unified School District. And this district is also been quite heavily referenced in the newspaper reporting and TV reporting on this type of bond structure that we're discussing this evening. So I did want to set forth the salient facts and just see how we're similar and how we're different. Okay. So in Poway, the total interest to principal ratio is 8.35 to 1. In our case, if we issue the maximum bond, it's 5.66 to 1. Okay, so it's less than two-thirds of that interest ratio cost, significantly less. Their final maturity, their final payment, was in 40 years. We're currently projecting that to be in 37 years. Looking again just really quickly at the interest, if we take into account the state funding, which issuing the bond leverage allows us to get, then our ratio is 3.11 to 1, which again compares to the 8.35. I don't know if Poway was getting state funding for their bond. Okay, that certainly would impact this. I don't know that. Now, Poway, their bonds didn't have any ability to prepay them in the future. No ability to refinance them should an opportunity arise in the future. In contrast, we are planning to have the ability to prepay most of the principal maturities. Poway did a negotiated sale, which means they selected their underwriter slash lender before engaging in the sale process. The district has consistently and successfully used a competitive process where you get multiple bids from underwriters slash lenders and get the lowest interest rate possible, the best bang for the buck possible for your taxpayers. And finally, with regard to Poway, I wasn't there, but anecdotally speaking, based on all of the media reporting, there does appear to be a question about the level of transparency on the costs of this and what the pros and cons and everything prior to the bond being sold. We're hearing comments from board members who are surprised and things like that. I would hope that the board feels that in this particular instance, and maybe you're sick of this issue, we've had a quite high level of transparency. At the very least, we've certainly tried to. And oftentimes, that's the key. It's the transparency and having the information. Okay, so let's look at interest rates. And this is just now a little bit of information to consider. One is, interest rates are near historic lows. This is a chart of the Bond Buyer 20 Bond Index. It's a rough index of the bond market. It doesn't tell us necessarily that we'll get exactly 3.73% or anything if we issue our bonds, but it's a reasonable approximation of the bond market, just like the S&P 500 is an approximation of the stock market. So you can see that back to 1984, we're at almost historic lows on interest rates. I think everybody knows interest rates are low right now. That's the flip side of our economic challenges. Okay, so I want to provide just a little bit of information. This is going to be a lot briefer about what if you waited? What if you waited 5 years? And just put this on, I don't know how long, if you did want to wait, I don't know how long you'd want to, but what if you waited 5 years, for example? And so instead, you wanted to or planned to issue bonds in the year 2017. Okay. So nobody knows what interest rates are going to be in the year 2017, whether they'll be higher, lower, the same, or anything like that. But we do know what they are today. So any waiting, by definition, brings into play an element of risk. It's upside risk and downside risk. It's like, should you lock in your mortgage or wait? Do you think interest rates are going to go up or down? So we know what the market is today. We know that we have a plan, we have scenarios which work. Now, saying it works is different than saying it's a good idea. When I say it works, it mathematically works. Given that we have a maximum tax levy constraint. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to say. It mathematically works. That's different than whether it's not a good idea. In the future, it's possible you'd want to go to issue bonds and it literally wouldn't mathematically work. It couldn't work. So what if interest rates went up 1.25% over that period of time, 125 basis points? A basis point is 1/100th of a percent, or 250 basis points. So if they went up 125 basis points, in 5 years we could issue a 31-year bond with a $60 levy, get the entire $12.56 million. We're assuming we'd have no state funding. There's no reason to think that there would be state funding at that time. There's just no facts that would support that. That would require a new statewide bond measure to be approved by the voters, and for the district then to get in line, be eligible to receive that funding. The projected interest over that term of that new borrowing would be about $63.63 million, okay? $26 million in today's dollars. And the ratio of interest to principal is a little over 5, okay? So that's just one scenario. Again, interest rates could go down, but this is just one scenario. 2.5% increase, that starts to just get incrementally more expensive because it's all compounding, you know, these interest rates. We get $12.56 million, the payback, the interest cost would be almost $128 million in that scenario with an interest to principal ratio of 10, over 10 to 1. Again, interest rates could go down. We don't know. We don't know. That's the uncertainty. So should the board wish to proceed, and what we'd be asking the board for this evening is direction regarding a bond issuance. If you wish to proceed, this item could come back as an action item, and we would need to know from you what are the parameters, what kind of bond should we bring back to you if you want to proceed. If you do, we could bring this back for action on November 13th. We could sell the bonds in early December and be closed by the end of the calendar year. So I'm happy to take any questions. I know that's a lot of information.
There's a lot riding on the tax measure in November. Do you think this will change if it fails, which I think it will?
That wouldn't impact this potential bond issuance. I'm sorry if I didn't understand your question. So, that wouldn't impact this bond issuance. That is a very separate thing. In and of itself, that would not impact it, one way or another. So not a general fund obligation, has nothing to do with that. Quite frankly, it has nothing to do with the amount of general fund money we have or don't have. It's entirely a facilities bond, can only be spent on capital/facilities projects, not on any ongoing operational salaries that are, you know, are part of our ongoing program, cannot be spent on that. And the repayment source is property taxes, which everybody who owns property pays.
Jonathan, the interest rate's fixed for the life of the bond?
Yes.
And if the bonds weren't issued right now, what's the shelf life of them?
Right. The shelf life of your bonding authorization, because essentially when you had the bonds approved, the voters were saying, we authorize you to issue bonds whenever you want. So I'm not aware, there is no shelf life. There is no end point to that. In theory, you could issue the bonds 5, 10, 15 years from now. That remaining authorization, correct. I think one thing I did want to, and I apologize for skipping past this, but did want to point out to the board also under these two 2017 issuance scenarios that in the footnote, we've done a calculation for you of, you know, I think we know that getting money 5 years from now is not as valuable financially as getting money today because of inflation, right? So, for example, under this 2.5% increase scenario, the $12.56 million of bond dollars would really only buy the equivalent of $10.8 million of stuff if we were buying it today. Does that make sense? Things cost more in the... Okay.
I have a couple of comment cards here, people that want to speak to this item. Now is a good time to ask questions.
It's not on the agenda, Mr. Boone, but I do have a short PowerPoint on the projects themselves, which relates to, so I can do this now or I can wait.
Being that it's a presentation, they can't... Oh, I'm sorry, Mark, I misunderstood.
Yeah, so I can, it's up to you guys. I can do it now or I can wait.
Yeah, go ahead, that's
okay.
Fine.
So I need mine. Thank you. Thanks, Mike. I thought it was important this evening. We've talked about the effect of issuing Measure P bonds on projects. Oh, that's hard to read in blue. And so I put together some PowerPoint slides trying to help put this in print. You have in front of you a spreadsheet, which actually you've seen before, but we've updated again. So the first thing is we get our state money through the Office of Public School Construction through the State Allocation Board, which requires a lengthy bureaucratic approval process. And you've heard me talk about that before, and Michelle and Victor and et cetera. This is what we've received to date. $39 million from the state plus another $400,000 of high-performance incentive funding, some additional funds from PG&E, for a total of just under $40 million. That's what we've received to date from the state, from the Office of Public School Construction. We've submitted 30 projects, and we've been funded for 30 projects. Now, I'm not going to sit here today and guarantee you that in the future we can get state money. However, based on our track record, we're 30 out of 30. We currently have three projects on what's called in slang the unfunded list, which is actually goes to the State Allocation Board. State Allocation Board currently has state bond authority, and we are high enough up on the unfunded list that we would expect to be funded for these three projects. These are the only three projects we currently have left on the unfunded list. The other 30, as I mentioned in the last slide, we've been paid for. So these are the last three projects on the current unfunded list. And you can see the amount of state funding for each of the three projects. And that's where Jonathan gets his $10.3 million of state matching funds in his presentation. And a short description of each project. Arboga really has no fields to speak of, so this project would essentially develop the entire western side of the Arboga site with new fields, two permanent buildings containing 14 classrooms, restrooms, and storage. One is what we like to call an 8-pack, and the other is a 6-pack, so they are two separate one-story permanent buildings. The fields I mentioned, and a new bus loop with some parking spaces. Ella is a single two-story building, 10 classrooms, 4 classrooms on the first floor, 6 classrooms on the second floor, extensive field improvements including drainage, a new bus loop, expansion of the existing parking lot, and frontage improvements along 7th Avenue. Linda, which has received some extensive site improvements already, it's a 10-classroom building with a separate library building and some site improvements basically just around the building site itself. And those are all permanent construction. So, as you know, construction is expensive. We're currently estimating this includes soft costs. Arboga at about $8.5 million, Ella at $7.5 million, and Linda at $6 million. And again, one of the key differences there at Linda is not as extensive site work. And the reason Arboga is the most expensive, it simply has the most classrooms and it just has the largest scope of work. Arboga and Ella are approved and have target start dates of May 1st of 2013. Arboga's approval expires in August of 13, Ella's in July of 13. I've mentioned this before, when the approval expires, they come off the unfunded list. They have to be redesigned, brought up to current code, resubmitted, and they go back to the bottom of the list, if there even is a list. So those are the drop-dead dates for those two projects. Linda has a drop-dead date in May of 2014. So our current plan is that we would start that project in April of 2014. And I show the net cost, which is simply our estimated cost minus the state funds. So that's what the net cost would be to our construction funds, to the major P funds. Then a little farther down the pipeline in terms of planning, but not on the unfunded list. Again, from now on, we're not on the unfunded list. Kovalod, the city recently approved demolishing and closing 7th Street, subject to the district bringing forth approved plans and an actual construction contract. Our current, what we're working on is to close and demolish 7th Street, expand the current parking lot by a factor of 4. So, said again, it would be 4 times its size today. There would be a new bus loop on the west side, some miscellaneous site improvements, and we'd have 4 portables that are in the way, so we'd either have to move them or remove them and then bring in 4 new portables. Estimate that at $3.5 million. Since it's not on the unfunded list, we show state funding at 0. It is possible that we could qualify for some state funding in that project, but that would come at a later date, and we don't know what that is. So status in design, target start date of May 1st of 15. Next, we're working on some smaller improvement projects. You've seen these at some of our other sites. This one in particular is Browns Valley, Kovalod, Kynock, and Loma Rica. Replace aging play equipment, related site improvements, ADA, that's American with the Disability Act, upgrades, and installation of shade structures. We estimate that at about $200,000 per site. That project is not eligible for state funding, so that would be 0. And those that project is in design, and we could start it either this summer or the summer of 14. The other one we're working on, and the board may remember this from the refunding COPS, set aside $400,000 to do security system upgrades to all sites, including cameras, server software, installation, and cabling. The estimated cost to do the entire district is $1.2 million. We have about $400,000 available from the COPS refunding, which leaves a net cost to Measure P of $800,000. Status in design, target start date is this spring of 2013. So there's a short recap. They add up to $27.1 million. And as Jonathan does, I also wanted to show you what inflation would do at 2% inflation for 5 years. The project now costs $29.9 million, and at 4%, they cost $33 million. Again, waiting 5 years to do the projects. And again, as Jonathan said, with interest rates, we don't know whether that 2% or 4% is accurate, but I think we all know that once the housing market recovers, construction costs are going to escalate. So the critical issue is cash flow. If no additional Measure P bonds are issued at this time, we have approximately, according to my estimates, about $4.9 million available after completion of the current Oliverhurst and Yuba Feather projects. We would also, there's a footnote, there's also about another $1 million which we've designated for contingency land purchases and other small-scale projects. A good example of a small-scale project would be moving a portable or two from one site to another. And you're actually going to see that fairly soon. We want to move a couple portables from Cedar Lane over to South Lyndhurst. That would be a small-scale project. So Measure P proceeds would be 0. And with that, we would be able to start the Ella project in this spring. And we would be able to do the Browns Valley, Kovalod, Kynock, and Loma Rica project, but not all of it. And even to do that, we would have to borrow money from the developer fee fund for cash flow purposes, and which we would repay with the state money for the Ella project. So all the other projects would be lost. Cash flow with the 30-year term, I rounded up. I tried to use nice round numbers here. So the same $4.9 million. $7 million for Measure P, and then we would be able to start the Ella project this spring, the Linda project in the spring of 14, Kovalod in the spring of 15, and then the small project at the four sites, and we'd be done. Obviously, that scenario, you lose the Arboga project and the balance of the security upgrades. Last but not least, if all the Measure P bonds are issued currently, essentially all the projects can be done, and we'd have a little bit of money left over sometime in the spring or summer of 2016, which we could do another fairly small project until it was gone. So again, we've talked a lot about these projects, but I wanted the board to see what the plan, basically the plan would be with these three scenarios, either no Measure P, the 30-year, and then issuing all the bonds. So, questions?
The must-haves and then the nice-to-haves. The must-haves are school safety, the bus turnarounds for parking. What would happen if we did the parking area at Arboga, the parking area at Kovalod, and we continue to just stay in the portables and didn't do the big buildings, the fancy buildings?
You would lose the state matching funds. Here's Michelle. Could we even do that with Arboga without resubmitting it? I'm putting you on the spot. We'd just lose the state funding because we wouldn't qualify for any. And then we'd have to pull the project apart to do part of it.
Are the Arboga portables in such a condition that they're unusable now, sir?
Pardon me?
Are the portables at Arboga in such a condition that they're unusable right now?
No.
I taught in portables many, many years, and talking to teachers over those years, I would say the majority found them even better than a large, brand-new structure because you could control the environment, the heat, the air, the cooling. My last 5 years was in a new portable. How old are these portables at Arboga?
They range from a few years old to 20. And we're working very hard so that people can't control the air conditioning and the heating in portables. That's coming.
I'm with Mr. Fleury. I am concerned with the project as far as safety. I think we have a staff here that I think can pave, can't they, and maintenance and do that turnaround without sacrificing so much? Or is that something unfeasible?
The bus loop itself would probably be, I'm going to guess, somewhere between $1 and $2 million. And you'd get no state money.
Yeah, you keep saying that, but can it be done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I said it could be done.
That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Any questions from anybody else? I have these couple comment cards. People wanted to address the specific agenda item, so if you have questions, now's the time. I have one for Richard Everly, another one for Mr. Rob Greger. So, if you have questions, go ahead and come forward.
My name is Richard Everly. I'm the Auditor Controller for Yuba County. I'm also here speaking on behalf of Dan Mears, with a Treasure Tax Collector for Yuba County. He couldn't be here tonight, but he wanted to make sure that I shared some information with you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I also understand the difficulty it is making this type of decision. There's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of need as well. And I want to reiterate a couple of things. From the standpoint of the Auditor Controller and also the Treasurer Tax Collector, whatever the board decides to do, we will go ahead and make those assessments. It's not our job is to do that, and we will do that, as we've stated before. And again, just to reiterate, we understand the difficulty that this situation places the board in. This is a very weighty decision. And Last Friday, we had the opportunity, no, two Fridays ago, we had the opportunity to speak with Superintendent Todd, Assistant Superintendent Allgaier, and Mr. Jonathan Edwards, and we appreciate the opportunity to be included in the process. It's very refreshing to participate. So many things I'd like to share, but let's see, I'll make sure that I keep them brief. I'll start by... just reading a couple things. In the meeting with the superintendent and assistant superintendent and Mr. Jonathan Edwards as well, one of the things that was we were concerned about and we brought it to their attention was the assumptions haven't changed. Our concern is that our concerns, we brought up the Poway School District as an illustration, but our concerns is over the vehicle that we're using to sell these bonds, these capital appreciation bonds, specifically the 40-year capital appreciation bonds. We also recognize that no investment vehicle is evil, quote unquote, inherent in and of itself, but just the way that it's used. Also, the underlying assumptions, we think there's some room to, we think there's some problems with the underlying assumptions. And I'll just address those initially. Like I said, these are still 40-year bonds. Our concern is not necessarily with the amount of money being borrowed, although that is a factor. It's just the length of time that these bonds are being issued, those 40-year bonds. As has been demonstrated, there's a significant interest cost increase with the use of these capital appreciation bonds. As presented in Mr. Edwards' presentation, the interest is going to end up being about for the current proposal, it would be about $5.65 for every dollar you borrow, you'll pay back in interest. If you add to that the principal that you'll have to pay back as well, that comes out to be about $6.75 that you're going to have to pay back for every dollar you're going to borrow. And in the interest calculations, as the treasurer tax collector and the auditor controller, we would encourage you to include the principal repayment as part of those calculations. Those do increase the amount of those factors. We want to agree with Mr. Allgaier and Mr. Edwards as they have stated that these bonds are not the obligation of the district. They are the obligation of the taxpayers. And as we've mentioned in our last meeting, there is a potential that those assessments could not meet the debt service payment in any given year. Now, there are two options for that. Because it is not an obligation of the district, the district has the option to not pay. What would happen in that situation is those bonds would go into default, and it would ultimately actually end up affecting the credit rating of the school district. Now, again, as presented, that's not a for sure, but that is a possibility. And through the presentation, I made some notes, and I have to commend the board for its for selection of GFS and their recommendations. Mr. Edwards did a fine presentation, and as he stated, his job is to present facts and information for the board's decision, and I echo that statement. And as I share this following information, I don't want to be the Grim Reaper, and that's not my goal. I do want to make sure that the board has a full understanding of the opposite side, the risks or the potential negative impacts that could happen. And as Mr. Edwards said and Mr. Allgaier said, there's no guarantee that these things are going to come to pass. But we need to at least air those concerns. As Mr. Edwards said, the property values can go down. That 2% increase per year on assessed value is the maximum, and that usually is what happens. However, in economic situations like we have now, we've seen property taxes decrease based on a Proposition 8. And the parties, parcel owners, property owners can file a Proposition 8 exemption and have their property values lowered. And those property values will not reset to their Prop 15 value, their normal assessed value, until those property values increase to the level that they were when they originally filed their claim. For example, if I bought a house in 2006 worth $300,000, now it's currently worth $150,000, I could file with the assessor's office, and he would, and if approved, he would lower my value to $150,000. Now, I could not, that 2% increase would not take effect until my property value increased back up to that $300,000 level. In one year, it could go back up to $300,000 level, and the property values would be assessed on that $300,000. So I'm trying not to be too cryptic in that, but it's possible that these values could fluctuate significantly. They can only go up by a factor of 2% a year, and that's usually what happens. However, the decreases could fluctuate significantly in any given year. I'll just make a quick transition. On the scenario one summary that was proposed, the current cost in today's dollars of the overall project would be about $29 million. And that's a $72 million in total payments discounted at 3%. What that means is, in order to take advantage of that current rate dollars, you would have to have $29 million in the bank at 3%, and you would let that accrue over the life of the bond, and at the end you'll be able to use all that money and pay it back. But it really only works if you have that money in the bank and now in order to achieve that interest rate. With these new structures that we're creating and that we're going to build, I'd recognize the need for those. Like I said in the last meeting, my children attend schools inside the district, and there is a need for those. There can be a compelling argument made for the replacement of those structures. I'd like to point out also that the systems and the infrastructure inside of those buildings will also need to be replaced, but at a sooner rate other than that 40 years. So you have to replace air conditioning units and computers and things like that a lot quicker than you have to replace the building. In order to do that, because there's no limit, you'll have to issue additional bonds at that time.
Would you elaborate on what
I'm
you
sorry.
Said again, please, sir? Elaborate on
what I just mentioned.
Yes, uh-huh.
The structures that you're building with these bonds, like the new classrooms and things like that, those have a very extended life. As we've seen in the district, upwards of 50 plus years that these buildings are sufficient. However, the systems like the heating and air conditioning, or other systems inside those buildings, as we've seen, we have to replace cabling and security and security systems. Those things will have to be replaced at a more frequent rate.
Sure.
And in order to replace those, you're going to have funds to do that. If the district does not have money in the general fund or in their capital asset funds to do that, they're going to have to issue additional debt. So that's they have to come up with money in some form to make those repairs or replacements in order to keep those buildings functioning. That was the point I wanted to make.
Okay, no, thank you. It makes sense now. Thank you.
And so while the structures are going to last for an extended period of time, and they will, the systems inside them will not. I could not, in good conscience, let this go without passing on the information of the treasurer tax collector. And he stated in these in our meeting with the superintendent that there's a possibility to ask the voters for another bond measure. And Mr. Mirzwa had another proposal that would be cheaper overall for that. Now, I do not pretend to have his expertise in that, and I will not go into detail of what he proposed. However, there is an issue with that, and part of the conversation was that the voters will probably not approve that type of issue. They will not approve more debt, and that's quite likely. And Mr. Mearswell pointed out that what we're basically doing is, instead of asking the voters to take on less debt and less obligation, we're going to force them into a situation that's going to cost them a lot of money. So that's part of our concern. So if they're not going to approve a good or a better option, are we willing to force upon them an option that's less desirable? So.
And I had a.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you're finished, I have a couple questions for you. Were you not?
Let me know. No, I just. You know what? I'll ask a couple more things, and I apologize for taking so much time. Just with the growth assumptions, and this will be my last option. I apologize for taking so much time, and I appreciate the patience. The growth assumptions, there is, in order for in order for us to, as a district, to receive, to achieve those growth assumptions, we're going to have a growth rate of approximately what we had in 2000 to 2010 decade. We're going to have, by my calculations, about three of those growth, of those periods of growth between now and 2036, 37, when we have to make our first debt service payment. So I'm not sure that we can achieve that rate of growth, considering the competition that we'll have. And it was, which I elaborated on in our last meeting. There's the South Sutter developments going in at the confluence of 99 and 70. There's Plumas Lake that will continue to grow as well, and Wheatland will continue to grow as well. And those will all be competing for growth here in Marysville Joint School District. And so it makes it calls into question the ability for the growth rates to achieve those projections. Now, again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I'll turn the time over for questions.
Okay. Point of clarification, if another bond was issued, that'd be another $60 per $100,000 assessed value on the taxpayers, correct?
Up to, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so that would be adding another $60, just so we're clear on that. And then you said you were primarily concerned with a 40-year bond, capital appreciation bond. Does that mean you are more supportive of a 30-year bond?
From my first glance at the information presented tonight, it doesn't change things a whole lot. We're still paying about the same level of interest, $5 to $6, actually close to $6 for every dollar we borrow, even if we issue the 30-year bonds, the capital appreciation bonds. So I'd have to answer that, no, I'm not real thrilled with that. It is better.
Okay.
But as Mr. Mirzwa, I think, talked about, it's just because it's less of a bad thing doesn't mean it's better.
Any other questions? No. Hey, I have a question for Jonathan, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, is there any chance of issuing these bonds as current interest bonds in the future?
That would probably require assessed values to grow more than we're projecting. As you may recall from one of the slides I was showing you, where I was showing you the tax levies on the bonds, and specifically the tax levies on the Series 2009 bonds on Measure P, the tax levy just for our existing 2009 bond was in the high 50s. Does that ring a bell? It was like $57, $58. So, you know, our maximum for all Measure P is $60. That's not much left to pay cover interest. So we probably could issue or include in a bond issuance in the near future some amount of current interest bonds, but it would be a very small amount because there's hardly any room. We'd still have to issue the majority as CABs. If I may take a moment to just to clarify one other thing too, because this word risk, I think, is, you know, has been part of the discussion. It's been out there in the ether. As a reminder, you may recall those charts again we were looking at, where I was showing you the tax levies that we have right now. Okay, for the 2006, 2008, and our 2009 bonds, about $120 per $100,000. So to the extent there is risk, and I certainly agree that we would not, I mean, ideally, no bond with our name on it would go into default. We're not legally obligated to, but I don't mean to ever downplay that would ever, that would not be a good situation. But let me just clarify this. Right now, today, the tax levy is about $120 per $100,000 for the three bonds. Do you recall seeing that from our presentation? Do you also recall that I showed you that issuing a new bond, whether 30 or 37 years, hardly adds anything in terms of taxes and bond payments for the next 20 years? Does that ring a bell? So it hardly adds any risk. You already have, first of all, to the extent there is risk, we already have it. 95%, even if you go ahead and issue a bond, 95% of all bond taxes and payments that are necessary for the next 20 years we already have. Okay? And this issue was true when we issued in 2006, in 2008, and in 2009. And it was never, I mean, we would review what it means to issue bonds, but it was not a material factor in play. It's only in play because this is controversial because of the economics. But it's not, I think it's issuing this bond for the next 20 years at least, mathematically, does not materially increase any risk to the extent there is any. I'm trying to be very objective when I speak about this. I think that's just a mathematical fact. Does that make sense? Mathematically? Okay.
Mr. Greger?
Good evening, board members. As a principal of L Elementary, I just wanted to kind of give you a feel from what I get and talking with staff and also with the community and parents at Ella Elementary with in regards to this. Obviously, I'm not running for an election, and so it doesn't really do anything for me, unlike for yourselves who do have elections and things that you are responsible to your voters and things that I don't have. So it is not a risk to me personally, and I understand that. But as far as my families, I do take that personally as a principal, and I don't think I would be doing my job if I didn't come up here and present that before the board and where our families are. When I started at Ella Elementary 2 years ago, this is my third year, there was a board out in front that stated that we would have projects that were done, except for Mr. Crawford and Mr. Miller's name. All of your names were on it, and it said that we would be doing these projects by the time of 05-06. None of those have happened at Ella at this time. And that is, to me, kind of like that written bond of when you put your name to something, we need to complete it and finish it. And that's what the parents are asking. When are these things going to be done? Well, the first thing I did as the principal is I asked that would be tore down because I was actually embarrassed by it, knowing that there was no project at this moment or at that time going to be happening. I still receive that from the parents. When is something going to happen? When is a project going to take place at Ella? And I know that when you look at the scenarios in our economy today, if things were still where we were then, would we even be having this conversation now? No, you would go ahead and go with the idea of completing those before, you know, the parents, the community, because you made a commitment to them. And I look at it from the children's perspective. I know that the gentleman before me was talking about these buildings that are dilapidating and falling apart that are going to be new. Well, think about the ones that we're in right now. The buildings that we're in, most of them were built in 1939. With that, in fact, many of them already falling apart. The air conditionings are breaking down, and that is an expense. What's that going to be like in 30 years, 40 years at that time? Most of them probably will not be functioning at the level that they are at this moment, which cost us even more. I know that when I look at something, I try to look at what's best for my family. I look at what's best for my long term, and then the investment in it. The investment that you're going to receive for this is for the children. It's not you personally and what you're going to get. It's what the kids are going to receive. They are going to have pride in their community and in their classrooms. And it gives the teachers that sense of pride, too, in having something new. When I was at Cedar Lane Elementary, we got to experience that firsthand. When parents started walking into that office when it was completed, you should see the smiles that came on the faces, the pride that was brought with that through the students and the parents saying, I go to Cedar Lane. Look at our school. Look at what's happened. Look at the fields, the things that go with that. Right now at Ella, we don't have those to look at. What we do is we have scores that are going up by over, you know, almost 130 points in 2 years, which is phenomenal. And we're seeing pride that is being exhumed through children every day. Now we're going to have the opportunity to be able to bring, I would say, nice, beautiful buildings. And while the dilapidated ones, we'll be able to move along and get rid of through this time. I hope that we look at it for the investment's sake also. I would love to be the one that was loaning you the money and getting that back, obviously. You know, when we're talking about, you know, $12 million, which really is technically about $22 million that we're really getting for the investment on our money. Sure, I would love to get $87 million back is about what you're going to get on that return. I would love to be the one that was investing in that. But I also bought a home, like I hope many of you have, and invested in buying in cars and things of that nature. And it depreciates in value. And it's not worth what I paid for it. Frankly, I bought a home for $240,000, and it now goes for $60,000. Do I like that? No. But am I making my payment? Yes, because I put my word down there. And I wrote my name that says, I will make this payment, and I feel obligated to. I know in this day and age, a lot of people don't feel obligated, and they're backing out of them, and they're leaving those. I find that kind of appalling, to be honest. I know there's scenarios where they don't have to, but I have good friends that choose to, even though they still have a job, and they're still making payments. That personally appalls me. In this situation, we're just going in with full understanding, full knowledge, and that's what's being presented to us. Is it the perfect scenario? No. But is it a good scenario for our kids? And what are the families looking for? I would say yes. And that's what I'm looking at from my point of view is when we sign our name to something, let's complete and finish that task. And that's all I'm asking from that. And I know the parents, when they're talking, they're asking, when is it going to happen? Because they saw the names, they saw the commitment, but they have not seen anything done with that. So those are this from my point of view, but also from the community there that we're working with. And they did make the vote. They did already vote. They did say yes to this measure, yes to the improvements, but they haven't seen them. To completely erase that, you have to make that decision, not me. And I'm glad that it's you and not me, to be honest. I hate to be in your shoes, but I also know that just like me right now with my own home mortgage, I still make the payment because I know it's the right thing to do, and I sign my name. Even though it's a loan value of $239, where my payoff value over the life of that mortgage of 30 years, it's going to kill me. You know, it's almost $700,000 over the life term of it. But I made a commitment, and I'm going to complete that commitment and finish it. That's what I'd like to see done for Ella, for Arboga, for Linda, and obviously even Covalod here in the future, because it limits so much of our scope and sequence of what we can do throughout Marysville Joint Unified School District. And like I said, I don't want to be in your place. Otherwise, I'd go up for an election, but I don't have to be elected by the people. I have to go and represent you before the people that are the community members and the families, and then I have to be able to explain it to them why we chose to and why we chose not to. And that's a hard place to be. I'll be honest. That's a difficult spot.
Do you plan on explaining to them, the children and the parents, in 35 years when they open up their tax bill, they're still paying for that? Have you mentioned that to them?
You know,
this isn't 2006.
Right. And that's a good question, Mr. Crawford. But when we look at it, I look at it from this point of view. We're extending the pay, if you're asking me, by $60 for 7 to 13 years, depending on if you go for 40 years or 30 years. That's what you're doing. Instead of paying $120 in the year 2035, it changes to $60, and we're extending it. Otherwise, it would stop in the year 2035 from what I saw, and we would be done with the payments and it would be over. What we're saying is, for 10 more years to 13, will you make a commitment of $60 more for every 100,000 that you have? And yes, I would be willing to stand before them and explain that, and I think that's a good investment.
Any questions for Mr. Greger while he's here, or comments? Yeah, this is an agendized item. It's not under public comments. You can ask him questions or have comments.
We're the ones that we ran to make the final decision, and I have thought about all sides of that. Thank you.
All right.
I heard you. I appreciate the treasurer coming and hearing, because we need to hear from the experts also. And I appreciate that you've come twice and talked to us, so we just don't hear staff, we hear all sides, because we need to hear all sides when we make these kind of decisions, not just staff side.
I appreciate what you've just pointed out, and I'm going to take very seriously what you said. I also understand what the county people are saying too. You're asking for us to provide direction regarding this. That doesn't mean necessarily that we are making a commitment, does it? It's just saying to you that we want you to go forward with whatever paperwork is necessary. Is that what this is? What exactly is it that you want from us tonight?
Okay, so in order to be prepared in order for staff to prepare for your board agenda packet, what is required for the board to take official action is a tremendous amount of staff and resources to do that work. So ideally, we would be asking for direction that would ideally lead to that direction being officially adopted by the board action. So that's the level of direction we're looking for. Of course, the board can vote however it wishes on November 13th, I think I had, should you wish to proceed now. But quite honestly, ideally, we'd be looking for some sort of direction that you would plan to proceed on that basis, because otherwise all of the work preparing for that meeting would have been wasted. And it's a tremendous amount of work.
But, yeah, I understand that. But what I'm saying is, it says here that we're going to consider the resolution authorizing the issuance of the bonds on November 13th, which means that's our final vote. So we might think one way right this minute, but we may be thinking it through over the next couple of months, and maybe we won't. I mean, you know, I mean, we still have that option. This isn't saying that we have, that we're making a, well, there's only five of us here tonight. There's not seven, and this is a huge, I will tell you, this is probably one of the biggest decisions that I've ever had to make in 20 years. And I'm taking it extremely seriously, and all this, and to, I understand you have a lot of paperwork, but I'm not, what I want is, I don't know that I want to make that decision tonight, to be perfectly frank with you.
Where we are at the moment is we need direction. In order to prepare the paperwork, it is, there's a cost to that. Certainly we can say if the board is interested in pursuing the 37-year, the 30, not at all. We're looking for that type of direction. I would like to take just a moment. I know this is digressing just slightly, but 8 years ago when I first sat in this seat, I think we all know that we looked at the schools and we said, oh my goodness, look at the leaking roofs, look at just terrible condition of the sites. And over the last 8 years, we've done some pretty phenomenal things. McKinney, as you, some of you may know, was built in 1957, and it only took 55 years to get a gymnasium. Yuba Gardens was built a year earlier. It took them the same amount of time, but 56 years. Marysville High School, as they grew, they started adding portable classrooms. And in 1967, they had the ones that we just recently took down, and that was 45 years to get new classrooms. Those are outdated science rooms. I can't tell you how many years I heard the complaints about the inadequate educational environment that we were providing our students. We want to give them as good an education as anyone across the river or down in Sacramento. When we look at those kinds of examples, I think it's also important to look at the number of years that students have gone without. And Lyndhurst was built in 1974, and it only took 38 years to build a new science classroom. And if you say approximately 1,000 students have attended Lyndhurst for the past 18 years, that's not counting the first 20 years of the building. The last 18 years, you're looking at about 18,000 students were educated in inadequate substandard classrooms. When enrollment went up at Marysville High School, those temporary buildings I mentioned earlier were put into place. And if you take out the first 20 years once again, and you figure there's 500 students that went through there, that's 12,500 years of education in inadequate facilities. This is once again a golden opportunity, and I know you all are taking it very seriously. Construction prices are down. Building it today is what the voters, I believe, said when they cast their yes votes. They didn't want to wait for their grandchildren to be in those rooms. They wanted it now. Building today is going to be less expensive than in years to come. Certainly you have a big decision to make. But I want you to remember, it's the kids who were in that classroom. We talked about the portable classrooms. There are issues with mold. There's all kinds of environmental issues with those portables as they get older. And we've kept them because we had to. And I will tell you, the teachers who are in the new buildings can tell you that it's a much more adequate facility for those students to be learning and we're asking them to learn an awful lot these days. Most of us took algebra in high school. That's now our required eighth grade class. The level our kindergartners coming out of getting ready for first grade, 85% of those kids are reading. When I went to kindergarten, we were having graham crackers and milk and taking naps and socializing. Reading and math computations were not a big issue. That ballpark has certainly changed, and I hope that you remember that it is the students that are going to be denied that opportunity. And the voters did say they wanted these facilities by an overwhelming majority.
When I'm looking at this, I agree with you. When I look at these two scenarios, and there's a difference of 7-point-something years, 36, the first scenario is double. It's twice as much money and so much more done for the kids. You know, in some ways this is not going to be a win-win situation, but in some ways it is a win situation. Because I do know as a teacher that when the kids are proud of where they are going to school, proud of their classrooms, proud of what it looks like, and I do remember the comment that was made by a Lyndhurst student a couple years ago when they walked out of the science building and said, "We look like we're in a rich man's school." And they said it with pride. And that was not exactly the words, but it was the same thing. And it was heard by our grounds people, which made them feel very, very good. Those kids took a lot of pride, and I take a tremendous amount of pride when I go around and see all the schools, see what we have done. And I do remember what it was like, and it was a mess. In practically every school we had. So we've come a long, long way, and we are not finished. And when you see 7 years, and we've doubled our money, and what, tripled what we're doing or whatever, we have to consider that. We have to consider that. And are we looking at today's kids? Are today's kids that are going do deserve to be proud of where they are? And tomorrow's kids can be going into something that they wouldn't want to step foot in because we had to come to a grinding halt. Do think that's a major consideration? Because it sounds like that is what could happen. And so we do have, you know, we're thinking of tomorrow's kids, we're thinking of today's kids. I don't know. That's where I am.
When we look at these bonds, I always tell my kids to look at the amount of interest. And I look at 37, 40 years. I personally cannot go that long for the interest rate. I look down the road, the way the economy is. There's a lot of things that we have to judge and look at. I look at what we've promised the voters. I've looked at the amount of interest, the economy. Nobody's got a crystal ball, but things are upside down right now. And as I said earlier, you know, we are responsible. We are ultimately responsible to the taxpayers and the board for all entities. It's not Gay or Mark, it's the board that's going to be ultimately responsible. And I don't know, I just can't go the 37 years to carry this on for 37 years. I would like to see less for the amount of interest that we would be paying. I always look at the amount of interest. It's not our money, but yet it is our money because it's taxpayers' money that we have been voted in to look and be a good steward of their money. And we're a poor county. And the tax rate, I don't know exactly what we're paying on housing now for taxes, but I know it's quite a bit because I know that my kids have talked to me about the taxes. But for 37 or 40 years, I cannot personally, speaking for myself, go with that. And I have thought about this The three issues since I've been on the board, the ROTC, I got a lot of calls, and the adult ed was more than that. This one takes the cake. I've had more calls and stopped on the street when I'm out in schools. I have a lot of people. There's a lot of opinions all across the board. And so we have to listen to all across the board and weigh in our conscience what's the best. And I will admit, I've done a lot of praying on it to make the right decision. I'm not going to make it cautiously, or I'm going to make it cautiously. I'm not going to make it cavalierly. I'm just going to think about it. And I know it. Mark, would you do this if this was in your community, this kind of a bond, truthfully?
Are you asking me if I'd do the 37 years?
Yes, if it was in the where you lived.
I'd issue the 30-year bonds and forego the Arboga project. If you're going to ask me a direct question, I'm going to give you a direct answer, and that's my answer.
And on these projects, who does the priority list? How do we decide, what you said, the Arboga, which one is, how do we do this priority list, how someone gets on the list or makes the list, comes off the list?
That's the same question we've had many times over the years. It's just the way they're designed and approved and funded. The whole reason this is even surfaced now is because the Arboga and Elwha projects expire in the summer of 13. We lose our DSA approval. They've been extended as long as we can legally extend them. When we lose our DSA approval, then they automatically come up off the unfunded list, and we no longer qualify for the state matching funds. That's the reason we're here. We've been here now for the third meeting discussing issuing Measure P bonds. It's being driven by the expiration of the Arboga and Elwha projects. You asked me a direct question. Mm-hmm. I believe we can get the most projects done with the exception of the Arboga with the 30-year bonds. And I believe, in spite of a couple comments this evening, one of the things that was presented at the last board meeting was an objection to the 40-year bonds, but not an objection to 30-year bonds. Now, perhaps that is not an accurate statement, but that's what I recall.
I wonder how many of here are Yuba County taxpayers in the audience. Let me see your hands. 4.
See, they welcome and let us know how you feel now, folks.
The thing with bonds, you know, they're kind of a double-edged sword. Everybody votes on them, but only the property property owners pay for them. That's where I kind of have a problem with them. If there was some way to legally do a sales tax or something like that, no problem. But where everybody pays for the projects. But when property owners are asked to foot the bill for the entire amount, people that have talked to me lately don't feel that this is a good deal for their tax dollars. They feel like it's just too much interest to pay. Not that they don't understand that we need these buildings and we need these projects, but they don't feel it's a good investment of their tax dollars. So, you know, and Mr. Greger, thank you for your presentation. You come up with some very good, very good points. Mr. Everly, thank you. Also, Jonathan, you've brought us a ton of great information. We appreciate it. You've been extremely transparent. We couldn't ask any more of you. And everything we've done through issuing all these bonds has always come out exactly the way you've told us they would. You haven't hidden anything from us. Mr. Allgaier's office, without him, we wouldn't have been where we are today. We wouldn't have all these projects completed. So everybody has done a wonderful job in this whole process. But unfortunately, with the economy the way it is and asking the taxpayers to pay, you know, $85 million in interest on $22 million worth of projects, I have a hard time with it at this point. So, you know, and I'm not opposed, like Mr. Allgaier said, is looking at scenario 2. So.
Well, I know I came from the last meeting with the idea that if we could just get
somewhere in the middle, and I guess the 30 years is actually the somewhere in the middle. So I don't want it to come to a crashing halt. I don't want it to come to a crashing halt.
I think what we would like as far as direction, are you willing to continue to consider the 30-year, which was the second scenario, or do you want this process to stop now?
I think if we're going to look at considering the 30-year scenario, we ought to revisit it now so that we're not spending a lot of money asking Mr. Edwards' office to complete all this, the paperwork and all this stuff that they have to do, because we're still wasting money. We would still be wasting taxpayers' money if
Don't want to do that.
Do we want to go back and revisit scenario two now? I don't know. I don't know where the rest of the board is. I guess we need to take a consensus of the board and see where we're at this point. Mr. Miller?
I think we should drop the year.
Mr. Fleury?
So what is the interest on a 30-year before we go?
Well, we'll go back and we'll have Mr. Edwards revisit it, yes.
It won't be not like...
Still substantial, yes.
Yeah, highly substantial.
And then we can...
Mr. Edwards, do you have a figure on a 30-year, though, so we won't have to take much more of your time?
Yes. So page 18 of my presentation, I believe the board has a handout, has a summary of scenario 2, the 30-year scenario. And the projected total interest over the term of the issue is about $27.5 million. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
On page 18? Okay.
And that's on issue amount of $6,980,000?
The issuance amount will be in the $6 to $7 million range, currently projected here at 6.98. Interest rates have gone up a little bit, and of course will vary until we sell the bonds, but you get roughly $6 to $7 million from bonds, plus $5.9 million in state funding. So you'd be in the $12 million range total. Do you see that on page 18?
$13 million in interest.
No, let me clarify. The interest cost is 27.
I'm sorry, I was listening in. 27, okay. I guess it's my turn. You want some direction. I'm probably with Mr. Miller on this. I certainly don't want to offend anybody. Staff has put tons of hours in this. Mr. Algar, I really admire your candid comment, because you were asked a really loaded question from Mr. Fleury, and it took a lot of guts to answer. I have kids that live in Yuba County. They're going to make Yuba County their home. My daughter is a senior at Chico State. She'll be back living here. We're looking at homes now. I have granddaughter. So, yeah, it's personal with me. I won't be around while they're still paying this loan off. That's wrong. I probably would look at it differently if I lived in Sutter County, Placer County, any county but Yuba. Based on that, I'm not going to forfeit. I'm sure, well, you always hear the impassioned, we're doing it for the children. If you take those same children, sir, and ask them 20 years from now, yeah, why am I still paying this bill when they open up their taxes? It's because some teachers and some board members wanted a new building when at a time in our economy we were going through a Great Depression. And I don't think they'd be so enthusiastic and excited with the premise of that good old school I remember when I was five, because they're going to be paying and paying and paying. And let's make no mistake about it, it's a tax. It's a tax not for Sutter County, not for Yolo County, it's a tax for just Yuba County. And yeah, I was surprised, like many of you, a couple days ago when I read Yuba College, of all places, ran this by everybody. They're always claiming how diligent they are. Well, I was a little shocked. pay them. I'm paying another tax there. I don't want to get into a, quote, P match with those people. But the first thing I always taught my students were, if you're going to sign something, read it first. And apparently, some people don't. And I love children just as much as the rest of you. I wouldn't have had some of my own. I wouldn't have my granddaughter living at home now. But just because I'm not going to be around when she's paying taxes doesn't mean I'm going to throw the baby out with the dishwasher. So I'm with Mr. Miller on this. Let's put this baby to rest. Is that eloquent enough? Or
yeah.
Do you kind of get the message? How I feel about that?
Mr. Chairman, I grew up in this area. I went to Alicia School. Dang, it don't exist anymore. My brothers went to Alicia School. Guess what it was? It wasn't that gorgeous school you have over here in Oliverhurst. Nah, it was barracks. The old wood, tar paper wrapped around it. Teachers had to show up in the morning to start the pot belly stove with the coal. That was the heat. They didn't have any air conditioning. Dang, that would have been nice. And I watched it grow from that. I watched it grow to some nice buildings. Cedar Lane, that's gorgeous now compared to when I went. I mean, there's some nice buildings there. And it's just a gorgeous school. It didn't exist when I moved to this area. I'm 66 now. I was 5 when we moved here. The only school in the Linda school district was Linda Elementary. And my diploma from Alicia School says Linda School District. And they didn't put us in 40 years of debt to build those nice schools. They used the funds when they had them. They built a little bit. And then they had a little more funds. They built a little bit. They had, before you know it, they had some nice schools. And I'm like Mr. Crawford. I can't. My kids don't live here, unfortunately. I wish they did. But I can't see putting the kids that are going to Lindenhurst High School and Marysville High School and a few others, you know, that are going to the intermediate schools. I can't see putting them in debt, us putting them in debt. Let them make that decision if they want to go in debt. Let them make that decision, not us. I'll probably be dead and buried by the time Lisa School gets built again. Why should we put them in debt? I don't think we should. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Fleury, do you have direction for Mr. Edwards and Mr. Algeier? So you are not comfortable with scenario 2, which is 30 years. You're talking 20, 25 years. Okay. Ms. Markle, would you like to say anything? We have a consensus of, we need 4, huh, with the 2 absent.
At this point, I'm hearing 3 notes.
Yes, out of 5 members here.
Let's finish it out for the
Well, I don't want to see this thing closed down. But how much is it costing us to have you go ahead with getting the paperwork ready? So, I really wish that Bernie and Glenn were here to weigh in on this. I mean, this is a decision that they should be here for. I know the final vote on getting the bonds, we hopefully will all be here for, but...
So not to put Jonathan on the spot, it's also bond counsel that becomes involved, the bond attorneys become involved at this point. It's probably, I would guess, $35,000 each, probably around $70,000. To prepare the documents for the November 17th board meeting and then finish the process through the closing.
That would be correct, pay from bond proceeds. I mean, bond councils, it's more work than cost. I mean, certainly there's cost. Bond council wouldn't charge the full amount if we didn't complete this. We wouldn't. But, you know, it could be in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $40,000, I think, realistically. If it didn't get completed, obviously the cost of issuance are different if we do complete it, but it would be a little bit less, but still possibly something there. It's just a work item, but certainly, we will do whatever the board directs us to do. Take this moment to clarify one piece of information just to assist with decision making, which is, unfortunately, a 25-year option financially is not really a feasible option. That last five-year difference between a 25-year bond and a 30-year bond, that 5 years is when we've paid off the 2009s. That's when we have room to pay back debt. If we don't have that, we're talking about issuing $1 million or $2 million, which is just completely impractical. I would advise against that. So this 25 years is not a practical...
Well, I don't know. I need my, you know, I would go for scenario two. I really feel that we owe it to the voters of today who did the voting to do what we said we were going to do, and we can't do it to the extent that they want, but we could do it to a small extent, and perhaps it'll come up and bite me. I don't know, but I really wouldn't want to be the one to have to go tell the schools, hey, you're going to have to stay the way you are, when they need help so badly. So that would be me.
So if I may, Mr. President, so possibly one option is to bring this back as an action item at the next meeting. And the action item would be proceed formally and do the work or not.
Prefer that you do that because hopefully we will all be here. And
it wouldn't be action to actually approve the financing per se, but it would be a clear vote of board direction at your next meeting. That would be an option.
Tonight is not an official vote.
It's not an official
it's
vote.
It's not an action
item. It's not
item.
A vote. It's not an action. It's a discussion item. But
yeah, it's a consensus, and I really want to hear what other two people say.
Mr. Boom, if I may,
sure.
It's my understanding Mr. Rex will be absent at the next board meeting on the 25th. If the board would like to consider this, we could agendize it again for the first meeting in October, which I believe would push the ultimate sale of the bonds, if there are any, into January, which is still doable. It's starting to crunch our timeline, but it still can be done.
Mr. It's my understanding that
that is your prerogative to re-agendize that as an action item. I apologize to you.
It's agendized as a discussion item tonight, but, you know, in all fairness to the rest of the board members, you know, if I had to vote on this tonight, I would also vote to stop right now and not issue any more bonds. I just can't, in good faith, ask the taxpayers to do it at this point. It's just not a good investment for property owners. Although I do feel that we need the buildings, I would be, you know, as a property owner myself, I have several parcels, I would be more than willing to take this on, but other people that I've spoke to aren't so willing. And as far as it, our kids and our grandkids paying for this down the road, I'm not concerned with that because they're the ones that are going to get the benefit out of it. Their kids are going to go, hopefully our grandkids will go to school there and their kids will go to school there and they would have better facilities to be in. But, so that's where I am with this. Okay. So, do we want to bring it back as an action item? No, we've got four, so there's no sense in bringing it back.
Right. What I'm, in my calculation, I have four no's.
Yes.
That would be the majority if all seven board members were here.
Yes.
So although it's not an action item, it's certainly giving us direction.
Okay, we'll move on. You know what? Let's take a 5 or a 10-minute recess, and we'll come back to business services number 1.